Hello, everybody, and welcome to our special preview of our What a Cartoon Movie episode about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I am one of your hosts for this little segment, Bob Mackey, who's here with me.
Henry Gilbert, and what's up, Danger?
And this month, as was voted by our patrons, we watched and talked about the movie Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and the episode is unedited as of this recording, but I want to say it's probably our longest podcast yet. I'm going
to... Close to it.
I won't bet on it, but it's got to be up there.
It's pretty high up there, yeah. Definitely, and it's a real premium experience where me and Bob go through the entire feature-length film of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse with our usual clips and history and pointing out Easter eggs. And also, we talk about how the film even got made, which was no easy task.
Yes, so many executives got together and through their sheer brain power made this movie happen.
And some people drew something
and
or
some,
whatever.
Some artists were involved, I think.
But no, we do go a lot into the artistry of it and how it's animated like almost nothing else on its level before. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels so experimental for such a giant corporate film starring giant corporate mascot Spider-Man.
It's an amazing movie, and it's amazing it's good. It's amazing. It turned out okay.
It's such a funny movie. It also has really nice things to say about diversity and the importance of respecting one another. Now, we're all Spider-Man in a way, or we all can be.
It's true.
And yeah, we had a ton of fun talking about it. Bob was not too bored with my Spider-Man antics and my love
of course
of Spider-Man.
Not. No. I like learning a bit more about Spider-Man, and I always do when I hang out with Henry. So,
and I did wear my Spider-Man underpants wearing it, but during it. But yes, you can feel it in my voice there.
Made you a more powerful podcaster. But if you're wondering how to listen to the entire 3+ hour thing, you have to go to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons and sign up for the $10 tier, and that will get you the entire Into the Spider-Verse podcast, along with all of the other movie podcasts we've done, all approaching or over 3 hours long for things mm-hmm. like Kiki's Delivery Service, Batman Mask of the Phantasm, A Goofy Movie, Akira, and The Secret of Nim. All those movies we've done for What a Cartoon Movie, and they're all in the $10 tier at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
It's hard to believe it's been 6 whole months that we've been doing it, and so this puts it at over 18 hours
wow.
of content that you will get if you either pledge at $10 a month or up your current $5 pledge to $10. Plus, you'll get access to all the previous $10 rewards we did before that. A lot of fun videos, but especially the What a Cartoon Movie. And you'll be first in line for May's What a Cartoon Movie. To be determined, the votes are going to be up to you guys. And you'd only know that if you were a subscriber to the Talking Simpsons Network at patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
And we know that $10 is not an insignificant amount of money every month. So we make these podcasts super long. We put a lot of extra work into them to make it worth your money. And all of these are great. They've been so great, so much fun to do. And again, they are very, very long, but not a second is wasted.
Not one moment.
Yes.
So yes, I guess here's your little preview of it. And if you want to hear the full thing, once more, $10 a month, patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Now, thwippity thwip, give this a listen.
Ooh, certain things you just can't refuse. She wanna ride like a cruise, and I'm not trying to lose.
Meanwhile, at the same time, there's Ultimate Spider-Man comics, which, not to get all into the ringer roll on that, but the Ultimate Universe is a separate universe from the classic Spider-Man universe that wanted to tell stories of a brand new Spider-Man for the new millennium. It starred Peter Parker, but they were thinking like, well, this is getting kind of repetitive to have Peter Parker in the regular comics and in Ultimate comics. There you decide they're going to kill off Peter Parker. And writer Brian Michael Bendis and artist Sarah Pacelli say, well, who would replace him? Who would be this new Spider-Man to be very different from the other one? Brian Michael Bendis thinking to Donald Glover and also the then new President Obama, and also his own experience as raising 2 African-American children, he feels like the youth should be a person of color should be Spider-Man to let people know that that anybody can be Spider-Man. And so those two together, Bendis and Pacelli, create the character of Miles Morales, an Afro-Latino teen with spider powers who will take over the mantle in August 2011. And aside from some obvious racism on message boards, his stories are very, very well received, and he is a popular character who starts appearing in tons of comics. So 2011, MCU is going strong. Sony's trying to do their Spider reboot and they want to do a bunch of Spider-Man movies. They want to do one with even an Aunt May prequel and a Sinister Six movie. And they're like, we can make dozens of Spider-Man movies. We can, but it's just not coming together because nobody likes the new Amazing Spider-Man film because it's just some boring white guy, Andrew Garfield in the role.
Stupid Garfield. Yeah, I thought I was not tapped into the original Raimi trilogy, but I thought rebooting the series that quickly was asinine, retelling the story that quickly. If they had just made another movie with a new Spider-Man, had him have another adventure, that would have been okay, even if it was boring. But I thought, like, you're retelling his origin again? Like, and that's why I love this movie.
It's pretty recent.
It's like, you know Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. You live in America, most likely, or who cares if you don't know who Spider-Man is? It doesn't really matter that much.
And they just have quick one-off lines of like, look, you know the story. I'm Spider-Man, right? Okay, let's speed this up. Yeah, I like that way of thinking because it's unlike Sony in 2012. They're like, no, we have to kill Uncle Ben again. We have to make you wait 40 goddamn minutes for him to be Spider-Man again.
I like how the Uncle Ben moment in this movie is maybe like 3 seconds. It's like, you know how to.
Look, there he is, okay? And so in 2012, they're really having problems with getting it together. While in the comic books, Bendis does the first time Spider-Man and Peter Parker meet, which introduces a lot of the character dynamics that they will pick up on in this film between Peter and Miles. Meanwhile, in Dan Slott, inspired by a Shattered Dimensions video game experience, he thinks of a mega crossover that will be every Spider person who has ever appeared in an alternate universe comic to that point, and he calls it Spider-Verse. And not only in Spider-Verse does he create this storyline where all the Spider-Men meet each other, but Jason Latour and Robbie Rodriguez, they imagine a world where Gwen Stacy, she became the spider-powered person, not Peter Parker, and they create the character of Spider-Gwen, who has spider powers and is a member of a cool punk rock band, and she's an immediate success. Everybody loves her. Her outfit is cool. Her stories are cool. And, you know, it's a diversity bonanza, too. Like, it was just this general idea that, like, Spider-Man can be more than one person. It's not just Peter Parker as Spider-Man, though Peter Parker will always be Spider-Man. He just won't be the only Spider-Man. And I think it was a real wake-up call for Marvel to see how many racists were like, Spider-Man's only white. He's only Peter Parker. Not by choice, but it makes Peter Parker this, like, almost white power figure of like, no, I'm the only Spider-Man, the white guy.
And their anger didn't make things less popular or sell less.
No, it sold. All that stuff sold well. Like, it was some, they were good comics, as well as comics sell now anyway. It's very different from 1992 in the comic book sales world. So, 2014, by the end of that, the MCU has taken off and Sony Spider-Man films are doing bad in that Amazing Spider-Man 2 made only $700 million.
That's insane.
That it was known as bad. Yeah. Though. And as revealed in emails leaked by the Democratic People's Republic of North Korea, it is revealed that Marvel approached Sony to be like, you know what, can we just make a deal that lets Spider-Man be in the MCU and we'll help you make new Spider-Man movies? Can we just do that together,
That was
please?
A North Korean thing.
Well, it was all going on behind the scenes and Sony turned it down. North Korea leaking those private emails about the conversations, that made it public and the public was like, no, I really want that. Why won't you make this deal, Sony? You suck. Like,
I really enjoyed hearing how much they hated Adam Sandler in all his movies.
Yeah, they're like, why are we putting this shit out? And it also revealed things like, you got to see how sexist Ike Perlmutter is when he said, like, Supergirl didn't make any money, so there should be no women in movies. The have you heard the NBD, no big deal quotes out
there? No.
Short version is that it was them saying, we need to make Spider-Man youthful again. You know, he should say things like, NBD, no big deal. Like kids say all the time.
I hear it every day.
It's really funny to see just how uninformed they are. And the only good thing that was revealed for Spider-Man in that is MCU bigwig Kevin Feige. He had an email saying like, here's how you should change Amazing Spider-Man 2. Do this. It's better for the character. Everything he said, in my opinion, was the correct thing to do with Spider-Man. And they did not do it in the movie. And the movie sucks. So once that's revealed, everybody's like, oh shit, we really should do it. Now they know it could happen. Let's do it. So Sony makes a deal that they will make two more Spider-Man movies that are set in the MCU and that Marvel will put Spider-Man in 3 Avengers films. There's no money exchanged there. It's just the recognition that they'll all make more money together if Spider-Man is in these movies. But there was one extra bit to that. Sony would now get permission from Marvel to do an animated Spider-Man film that they would not have had the permission to do previously. So that's in 2015. In 2014, also saw Lord & Miller release The Lego Movie, which, again, 8 billion times better than it ever had any right to be. And it got them the notoriety of, like, these guys can make a successful animated film, a four-quadrant hit, as the executives call it. So after the deal is made, they sign up Lord & Miller to work on an unnamed CGI animated film that would, quote, exist independently of the projects in the live-action Spider-Man universe. At first, the rumors are that it's going to be a Lego Spider-Man movie. Not true. And it is confirmed in January 2017 that Miles Morales will be the star of his own film only 6 years after he debuted, which is an incredible feat everybody. So Lord & Miller produced the film, which Lord would co-write the film with Rodney Rothman, a comedy vet who had worked with them on 21 Jump Street and who would get named as one of the directors for the film, though he doesn't seem like he has a big background in animation, and this is his first directing credit. But he's not the only one. There's Peter Ramsey, who's a really interesting guy. He got his start as a storyboarder for live-action hits of the 90s, including Independence Day, Being John Malkovich, and Fight Club.
Okay.
He was very accomplished there, and he then went on to be an animator and film director on forgettable animated films like Monster vs. Aliens and Rise of the Guardians, which I honestly had completely forgot existed.
Rise of the Guardians. Is that about birds?
No, that's the Owls of Ga'Hoole. I thought it was that first.
Okay.
Rise of the Guardians is what if Santa teamed up with Jack Frost and other mythical public domain creatures. It's really weird. But the important thing, too, is, though, that Peter Ramsey is an African-American animator who can give a viewpoint that white dudes like Lord & Miller can't really give to a story of Miles Morales. And that kind of trickled down to the entire staff in the art book I'm pointing at now that none of you listeners can see. They have so many interviews with the animation production team, and it is a very diverse group of men and women in there really putting their stamp on it. And then the third credited director is Bob Persichetti, who got his start in feature animation with Disney in the 90s. He worked on a lot of the big films, and he worked his way up to storyboarder at DreamWorks on some Shreks, and then shifted over to Sony to work under Ramsey on Monsters vs. Aliens and got moved up here. And he is also a very creative guy. Like, he has a lot of really interesting tips that he shares in the commentary. So then they've got animation supervisor Joshua Beveridge, lead animator Philip Rudolph, Humberto Rosa, and Julie Bernier-Goslin. They all do this bootleg commentary on the animation that is very granular, but if you want to know even more about the Easter eggs they stick in the film, it's really, really good. And it's a free download. You just have to self-sync it up. And so Lord & Miller envision a film anchored by Peter Parker's who pass on the torch of Spider-Man to Miles Morales in his own origin story, but they also wanted a multiverse inspired by the Spider-Man of Bendis, Slott, and so many other comic books.
Yeah, it's very sophisticated.
They really planned this out well, and they could pick and choose from like 57 years of Spider-Man comics.
And I know, just because it has to be this way, but I know those existing Spider-Men in this movie are from things. They're not just made up, but that doesn't matter to me, even though I've never seen them before.
They work as characters independent of you reading their comics,
And they get like 5 seconds of backstory, and that's the joke. Just like, we'll just go past this really quickly.
Yeah, if you want to find more, you can find it, but it's not necessary for it. And in Lord & Miller, you know, another thing they are amazing at is casting. They have just very fun and creative casting, and it really feels like they love to play with the actors and give them space to really own their characters. Like, it was the off-the-record reason of why they were let go from Han Solo, because the producers on it, Lawrence Kasdan, felt, you're getting too silly. You're asking for too much looseness here. You need to stick to my script, darn it.
We all know how that movie turned out.
Yeah.
Great.
It was such a great move there. But that's why this film has so much looseness to it. And on the Blu-ray, there are so many deleted scenes because they bored out a whole film of amazing stuff, and then they just trim from there. Like, that's their process.
This Blu-ray feels like the Blu-ray that would have come out 10 years ago that actually has special features. There's a different cut of the movie?
Yes.
Do you know what that is?
Oh, I watched the whole thing. It's an amazing cut. It's the alternate universe cut that restores about 30 minutes of storylines.
Wow.
There's also some altered jokes, and there's a couple I'll mention, but there's a big bit with Miles' roommate. Like, he is a Spider-Man fanboy who helps him train at first before he meets Peter, and they just cut the whole thing. Like, he'll seems like Gonki, I believe his name is. He'll be a major character in the next movie.
It felt like there were missing scenes with him.
Yeah, yeah. Like, they didn't want to get rid of him entirely, but you can get much more of the flow of it. Though, the movie would be 2.5 hours if they kept it in, so I get it. I mean, you can't, budget-wise, they can't make it that
long. I'm happy that a superhero movie is under 2 hours long.
And barely. And and this cast is full of a lot of experienced people and unknowns. You've got Shameik Moore, who, relatively unknown actor slash dancer, who before this was most famous for being in the film Dope and the Netflix series Get Down. Hmm. He really captures the feel of a young Brooklynite trying to navigate a bunch of cultures at once. He gives a real youth to Miles.
Yeah, he's great. I felt especially old because watching the credits, I didn't know who most of the actors were.
I had to search for a few of them. Yeah. I did. Though I didn't have to look up Jake Johnson. I had heard him.
Not me.
He is cast as Peter B. Parker. That's just their naming convention in there. Peter's name always is Peter Benjamin Parker. That's his middle name is Benjamin in all the multiverses. But they cast Jake to play a tired, late 30s Spidey who is kind of done with the whole thing. Then we've got Haley Steinfeld, who folks may remember from the remake of True Grit.
And the sitcom Steinfeld.
Yeah, Steinfeld on Steinfeld.
Oh, yeah. She was the little girl in True Grit.
Yes.
Wow, okay, yeah. I did see that.
And she was the new kid in Pitch Perfect 2, and she's just in a lot of stuff, and she gives a real, like, True Grit to Spider-Gwen in this movie. Then you got Liev Schreiber, again disappearing into a role as Kingpin. He's really good as, like, this gruff asshole. And then rounding out the cast, we've got Mahershala Ali as Prowler / Aaron, Brian Tyree Henry as the father, Jeff. You've got Lily Tomlin as Aunt May.
Really?
She's really good, okay. Yeah.
Wow.
And you have Zoe Kravitz as Mary Jane. Catherine Hahn, funny lady Catherine Hahn, as Liv. And then Kimiko Glenn as Penny Parker. John Mulaney, the hilarious John Mulaney as Spider-Ham.
I knew him.
Nicolas Cage as Spider-Man Noir. Jorma Taccone as several characters in this, who he's one of the Lonely Island, if you don't know that.
I say Nicolas Cage sounds tired.
Yeah, oh, he's just like, what do you want from me? Him and the extras are really great because they clearly, like, we've got you for an afternoon for the EPK. We're just going to ask questions. Like, yeah, you know, Spider-Man, he's really great. Spider-Man, yeah. And he's my favorite bit, though, he is such a DC fanboy.
Yeah.
That he makes sure to say that, like, Spider-Man is, you know, is the greatest Marvel hero of all time. He makes sure not to say greatest hero of all time because he definitely feels Superman is that since he named his son Kal-El. So,
yeah, I don't know what his stance on Marvel is.
Well, his stage name is a Marvel character.
Yeah.
He named himself after Luke Cage, Power Man.
He's a Coppola.
Yes, yeah.
That nepotism.
I love that he gets to change his name but still get all of the help of being a Coppola. I mean, not that he's not a great actor. I actually really love Nick Cage. And I like that he takes any garbage. And also, there's Chris Pine as the other Peter Parker in this, the one who dies. And I love that casting because Chris Pine would totally be cast in another universe as Spider-Man in a live-action movie.
That's true, yeah.
So it's a really smart casting. And also, a surprise appearance post-credits by Poe Dameron himself, Oscar Isaac, as Spider-Man 2099.
Oh, that was him, okay.
Which is really good casting because he is Miguel O'Hara, an Irish-Mexican mix race person. So having Oscar Isaac, a Latino himself, play the character, really, really good casting there. And the film also looks incredible, too. It has just an amazing color palette. There's Kirby crackle everywhere. They really embrace the comic book roots, which, you know, other animated films, there'd never been really an animated film directly based on a Marvel comic that had been released in theaters anyway. And even DC, they do a ton of animation, but it's very rare they do CG for their superheroes because line work, 2D for animation, and CGI is for live action, in quotes, movies. And
yeah,
CGI kind of gets lost in the middle ground of, like, like, well, if it's all CGI, why bother? We should have famous people standing around the CGI and green screen.
It's interesting to see that they're using a lot of techniques that video games embraced, where I felt like the idea behind the Zemeckis thing is like, we don't want you to think you're watching a cartoon because cartoons are shameful and embarrassing to you, the movie viewer. But they're going the opposite direction. Like, no, this is based on comic books. Let's incorporate, like I said, the artifacts of the printing process. Like, things are slightly blurry. You see, like, the little dots of colors on things. You see sound effects. You see dialogue bubbles. You see, like, emotion lines and things like that. They cut frames on purpose for impact, like anime does.
And sometimes characters are too close to the camera, so they're out of focus a little bit. Like, they play around it in so many ways that, like, a, you know, lazier film production wouldn't do it. And I'm really glad that they took a chance on this film to get all this unique animation. Wish I could beat it for you. Give me a reason to. Oh, every time I'm walking out, I can hear you telling me to turn around.
What are you? Some kind of silly cartoon?
You got a problem with cartoons?